Hello and welcome into another episode of Locked On Wolves. Today on the show, let's talk about the Timberwolves' depth, but very specifically, how much better did the Wolves get this offseason at the end of the roster than so many other Western Conference playoff contenders? We'll take a look at that. Plus, a big what if. Bleacher Report is posting what ifs for each team for the past, the past couple decades of franchise history. There's a big Timberwolves what if that we probably don't talk about enough when we consider Wolves what if. So we're going to talk about all that here today on the show. Welcome in. You are Locked On Wolves.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Monday, everybody. Hopefully you had a fantastic weekend. And a big thank you for making Locked On Wolves your first listen every single day. Of course, this show is free and available everywhere, including YouTube. You can also find it on any of your favorite audio platforms from Apple to Google, Spotify to Odyssey, and beyond. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and at B Beacon with two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. All right, today on the show, we move through August here. I think that's the part of the offseason where we have to really kind of reflect on just how much better this roster is now than it was at the end of last season. And I talked a little bit on Friday about offseason grades, a couple of really terrible offseason grades handed out by national websites, CBS and ESPN were the two I talked about, and how they gave the Wolves, I think ESPN gave them a C minus and CBS gave them a C. It was in the C range, and why those grades were wrong. I would say I ranted on Friday, which is not something I typically do on the show. If you're a regular listener, again, not a big rant, hot take type, host of this podcast. But I think that those offseason grades were absolutely absurd, and they became more absurd the more that I looked into them and how other teams were graded and the methodology supposedly behind it. Because I think from a national perspective, you look at the Timberwolves roster and you just say, okay, well, they traded three rotation players. They traded two starters plus a bunch of picks to get Rudy Gobert. How could they possibly be a deeper team than they were last year? Well, they are. And today we'll talk through who's gone, who's back, or I should say who's gone, who's new to the Timberwolves. And even if a lot of that movement or a lot of the improvement is not in play, one through eight in the rotation, some of it is, and I would argue they're still better, one through eight, one through nine, one through 10. But also the 11 through 15 guys on the roster, that matters over the course of an 82-game season. It may only be a couple games here or there in terms of actual wins and losses over the course of 82. But it really matters when you're talking about battling for a home court advantage, which very likely the Wolves are going to be in that 3-4-5 seed range in the Western Conference this year when it's all said and done. So the difference between 4 and 5 is massive. Depending on what those matchups are, perhaps the difference between 3 and 4 is huge as well. And over the course of a long season, that depth matters. Even beyond the top 10 guys in your rotation, we all know that injuries, guys get nicked up. The Wolves didn't do as much load management last year as some teams do, but perhaps they will. Of course, everybody's a year older. Perhaps Anthony Edwards could benefit from some of that. I know he wants to play in every game, but he got banged up a couple times last year, and it severely impacted his play with the way that he plays. So perhaps that enters the conversation a bit more, and it's one of the reasons why, one of the many reasons why depth beyond your top 9 or 10 players does matter. Even if you're talking about guys that get DNP CDs and don't see the floor for, say they only play in 30, 40 games over the course of the season, ultimately that's going to matter at some point. Whether your 12th guy is, not to throw anybody, I look at some of the guys from last year, right? It's going to be an upgrade over a Jake Layman, or it's going to be an upgrade over, some of the, even Josh Okogie in some cases, who's on the fringe of the rotation for much of the year. So let's take a look at that. And then later in the show, I do want to get to a Timberwolves what if as well. So we'll start here with the Timberwolves bench. And one of the things that stuck out to me is I saw an article on ESPN a few days ago about the Lakers, and they had 10 veterans last year but for the most part, like vet minimum type deals. Not all of them were vet minimum deals. And 8 of them are still looking for a home in free agency. There's 8 of 10 players that were part of the Lakers roster last year that don't have a job yet. And there were nine. Kent Bazemore signed over the weekend with the Sacramento Kings. But like everybody else is still on the free agent market. I mean, Isaiah Thomas is maybe less surprising, but you get on the list Darren Collison, who had come out of retirement, I guess, technically. Not technically, he did. Trevor Ariza, Rajon Rondo, Wayne Ellington, DJ Augustine, Avery Bradley, Dwight Howard, Carmelo Anthony. These guys are all still looking for jobs. The Lakers went out and got a lot younger. They signed a bunch of free agents to fill out the rest of their roster. What the Wolves did is they signed not just guys that were, because most of those guys are names, right? Obviously, Carmelo, Dwight, Avery Bradley is really struggled the last couple years of his career, but is still well known for his very good years in Boston. You know, everybody knows the majority of these guys. Rajon Rondo is another example of that. Trevor Ariza, of course, at various points was part of very good playoff teams and finals teams. The Timberwolves signed guys who, you know, I guess you could say Austin Rivers falls in that category. Everyone knows who Austin Rivers is, but Austin Rivers, Bryn Forbes, you know, adding some additional depth to this roster in ways that is maybe a little bit less sexy. Those guys aren't going to be in your top 10. I've said this before. I know Forbes and Rivers. I don't think those guys are in your regular 10-man rotation, certainly not 9-man rotation. It's going to be more situational, foul trouble, et cetera, when those guys see more run. I just don't know, especially if the Wolves are playing big, how often Bryn Forbes is going to get on the floor. But they're guys who are, if you need them, you know, break glass in case of emergency type guys, you know, maybe not that infrequently, but it's just a better approach than signing these guys who are 37 and on their last legs. Obviously, the Lakers, there were other reasons as well why the Lakers didn't succeed last year. But it's just fascinating to me that that's the whole, like, two-thirds of their roster was just these guys that now nobody wants a year later. The Wolves obviously aren't having that problem. Jake Layman's the only guy on the Wolves roster last year who's still a free agent. But the quality and depth of the Wolves roster is so much more significant. I want to dig in a bit more to the quality of really 10 through 15 on the roster. Who's actually gone? I know we just say flippantly like, three rotation guys were traded. But how are their roles being backfilled by new Timberwolves and Timberwolves who will now get a larger role, more playing time? And then also the backside of the roster. Again, 10 through 15, how is that so much better this year than it was last year? So we're going to do that here next. First, though, let's talk about our friends over at Built Bar. If you haven't tried Built Bar Puffs yet, you're depriving yourself of one of life's greatest joys. And I mean that. Guess what? There's a new flavor. It's absolutely delicious, completely indulgent cookie dough covered in chocolate. Built has done it again. Let me introduce you to our new favorite cookie dough chunk puffs. They have a light and chewy texture, real cookie dough chunks along the top of the bar. And of course, they're covered in 100% real chocolate. It really is all the joys of eating cookie dough without the hassle of making it. Plus, it's actually healthy for you. Cookie dough chunk puffs are only 160 calories. They have a whopping 15 grams of protein in them. Run to built.com. Don't walk, run to built.com to snag a box for you and the family. It will be the perfect treat. Or you can just find a really good hiding place and hoard them for yourself. Like all Built Bars, the new Cookie Dough Chunk Puff is covered in 100% real chocolate. That means they're healthy and they're tasty. Chocolate-covered cookie dough with a light, fluffy texture. What's great about Built is that all of their bars are made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently and provides tons of health benefits. Eat something that tastes good and is good for you. You're going to love the new Cookie Dough Chunk Puff. Whether you need a snack for your workout, a late-night treat, or just need to grab a quick bite, Built is the perfect protein bar, and they taste better than a candy bar. Ditch the calories, ditch the fat, and ditch the sugar, and grab yourself a Built bar. Go to built.com, use our promo code LOCKED15, and get 15% off your order. I just used that code again last week to restock. Again, promo code LOCKED15, you'll get 15% off your order at built.com. All right, so the Timberwolves this year, they jettisoned three rotation players. Yes, we know about the picks. We know about Kessler and the whole thing. But they jettisoned three picks to get Rudy Gobert, three rotation players, including two starters from last year's team. Malik Beasley, Patrick Beverley, Jared Vanderbilt. Of course, the latter two being former starters for the Wolves. However, they acquired Rudy Gobert, who is an all-NBA player, a multi-time all-star, three-time defensive player of the year, top 25 player in the league, if not top 20. So that certainly more than covers for losing two start, you know, good players. Vando's a very good player. Patrick Beverley's a really good player. Those guys probably don't start on most teams. They both started on a playoff team last year because that's how good Karl-Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards were. I don't think most playoff teams are starting Jared Vanderbilt at the four. I just think he was a really good fit with Towns. He had a good year. The Wolves didn't have many other options at the four. So I think that's kind of the quiet part we haven't really said out loud, is as much as those guys were very good and still coveted, probably will still be traded by Utah, especially if they trade Donovan Mitchell. Those guys aren't ideal starters for a playoff team. And they were for last year's Wolves team. There's a reason the Wolves lost in the first round, because they didn't have... Yes, they had a deep roster. They didn't have the top high-end talent. Now, I would argue the Wolves have both. Gobert is now in the starting lineup. Jaden McDaniels played essentially starter minutes down the stretch last season anyway. He gets bumped into the starting lineup, so his role increases. The other player that then backfills those three spots, Beasley, Beverly, Vando, would be Kyle Anderson, who they signed in free agency, was a big part of a good playoff team, a second-round playoff team in the Memphis Grizzlies, a team that was one of the top probably three teams in the entire NBA for most of last season. So the Wolves, basically you're out Jared Vanderbilt, in Rudy Gobert, you're out Patrick Beverley. We'll say you're in Kyle Anderson there, even though they don't play the same position. And then Malik Beasley's minutes are going to be filled by Jalen Noel, who again was on the team last year, but he goes from a, we'll call him 10th or 11th guy who wasn't always in the rotation for much of the season, into a rotation role. Similarly to how McDaniels was essentially a six-man, seventh man last year, he goes from rotation guy to starter. Each of those guys deserves a promotion for this team. They both had very good seasons. I would argue Noel had perhaps the most impressive season relative to expectations of anyone on the Timberwolves. I know McDaniels gets all the headlines. If you're a regular listener, you know how much I love Jalen Noel and how convinced I am that he is a top-flight bench-type scorer. You know, scores at all three levels, a beautiful hybrid in my mind between D'Angelo Russell and Anthony Edwards. With how he plays, I think he's just a fantastic bench piece for this team. He gets the minutes he deserves now. Jaden McDaniels becomes a starter and gets to play the three full time, which he played mostly last year anyway. But now he gets to play next to Karl-Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards, between two players who are very likely both going to be all-stars this year. So you backfill an all-NBA player with Gobert, a player who's up and coming to McDaniels, and another player who broke out last year in Jalen Noel, and out is Patrick Beverley, out is Jared Vanderbilt, out is Malik Beasley. At worst, that's a wash, but I would argue that's almost certainly an improvement. Jalen Noel was better than Malik Beasley last year. He just was. That's not a subjective thing. He was objectively better than Malik Beasley. You look at any stat you want, any advanced metric, whatever you want to say, Jalen Noel was better than Malik Beasley. So you're improving there. Rudy Gobert is better than either Vanderbilt or Beverly, and you could argue Kyle Anderson is too. So like, your top 10 is better. It's better. I mean, I guess your backup point guard minutes now, instead of giving some to Patrick Beverley, you're giving them all to Jordan McLaughlin. Certainly Beverley at this stage in his career is better than Jordan McLaughlin. But that would be the only thing that where you could even possibly argue that the team got worse. I mean, Towns is now your backup center, quote unquote. You're starting four and your backup center to Rudy Gobert. You know, your starting lineup of D'Lo, Ant, Jaden McDaniels, Karl-Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert, that's better. Your second line of McLaughlin, Jalen Noel, Torian Prince, who's back, Kyle Anderson, and either Towns, or you could say Naz Reid, that's better as well. And then you get to 11 through 15 on this roster. It's really hard to say that Bryn Forbes, an NBA Finals champion who was a rotation player in a playoff team last year in Denver, played minutes for a Finals team in the Milwaukee Bucks a couple of years ago, and played a long time for Greg Popovich in San Antonio. Bryn Forbes, a very, very, very good catch and shoot. What was he, 39% catch and shoot threes last year? Austin Rivers, very impressive pedigree, played on a lot of winning teams. Those two guys are better than Leandro Bolmaro and Josh Okogie. Those are better 11 and 12 guys on your roster. And then after that, you know, Nate Knight now is on a standard NBA deal, assuming he makes the roster, he partially guaranteed, but he's no longer a two-way guy. To say you have Nate Knight, to say you have Eric Paschal on a two-way deal, another player who's played for some very good teams. Last year is with Utah, second-round playoff team, played significant minutes for Golden State. Obviously, they weren't as good, but he was with Golden State and with Steve Kerr for a couple of seasons, was a draft pick by Golden State. to sit here and say, you know, Forbes, Rivers, Knight, Pascal are all better than, we'll say, Balmaro, Okogie, and Jake Layman are the guys that are out, right? So overall this offseason, Beasley, Beverly, Vando, Balmaro, Okogie, and Layman are the six guys that are gone. The six guys that fill those roles, you could throw in McKinley Wright to get you to seven guys are gone. The new players filling those roles, Rudy Gobert, Kyle Anderson, Bryn Forbes, Austin Rivers, Eric Pascal. I mean, those five are better than the seven that you're losing. And now you have AJ Lawson, you know, as your other two-way, who I would argue is a better two-way addition than McKinley Wright. We've talked about that on the show. And then your rookies, Wendell Morris, first-round pick, and Josh Minot with some upside there as an energy-type guy. You'd rather have that collection of players than the ones that you sent out. And I know that this isn't the same as the offseason grades because, you know, we're not factoring in the picks they traded, et cetera. But if you're looking at the roster now versus the roster 12 months ago or even 4 months ago, it's a better roster. It is objectively a better roster. There's almost no question about it if you line those two up next to each other. And so it bleeds a little bit into the offseason grades thing because it's absurd that the Wolves are getting penalized for having a better team, you know, in some of these offseason exercises at the national level. But the depth of this team really matters. And it was good last year. It's great now. The depth is just great. Stack it up against any other team in the Western Conference in 1 through 12, 1 through 14, whatever you want to do. It's better than what the Denver Nuggets did. It's better than, you know, Denver Nuggets added DeAndre Jordan and he's supposed to shore up their rotation. I know they did some other stuff too, but like, it's just there just aren't other Memphis Grizzlies. It was more about who they lost than who they gained. So many teams are relying on multiple rookies. Memphis has multiple rookies they're going to bring in and try and plug into the rotation, and they've had success doing that. So, I mean, I guess who am I to say that that's not, I'm not saying it won't work, but adding veterans to the rotation and adding an all NBA player, those are all things that make your team better on paper. And literally they will be better immediately when the season starts because they have quality veteran depth on this team. Whereas other teams are relying on younger players. They're relying on cost saving type moves. And then some teams just didn't get better. I mean, like New Orleans is going to have good offseason grades because everyone's just assuming that Zion Williamson is going to get healthy. They're only, you know, they obviously drafted Dyson Daniels, but again, their other rookie that you'd rely on, EJ Liddell, he's hurt now. He tore his ACL. You're just relying on Zion getting healthy. The Nuggets are relying on Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray getting healthy, which those things matter, yes, but there aren't additional, you know, adds to the roster. Memphis, it's mostly about the fact that they lost Kyle Anderson and D'Anthony Melton. Yeah, they brought some guys back, but then your only real addition to your that's not a rookie is Danny Green. Is that team actually better than it was last year? Probably not. So you stack up the Wolves offseason against some of these other Western Conference contenders, and I don't know. It's really hard to say who on paper would possibly have improved more than the Minnesota Timberwolves. But here we are talking about, you know, reading about how the Timberwolves aren't, you know, they didn't have a good offseason, et cetera, et cetera. So it's crazy to me. This is a deeper team. As much as I talk about depth, as much as I talked about the Wolves' depth last August, September, October, it's better this year. It is a deeper team, 1 through 15. The starting lineup, the first line of, you know, the first line of reserves, the second line overall, and the total roster 1 through 15 is better than it was a year ago. Okay. I want to close the show by talking about a Timberwolves what if. Bleacher Report did this series about each team's biggest what ifs, and I think the Wolves one is interesting, one that we don't really talk about enough in Wolves circles. We're going to do that here next. All right, every NBA franchise has plenty of what-ifs associated with them. Of course, the biggest Timberwolves one, if you just asked any, if you pulled 10 Timberwolves fans at Target Center on a random Wednesday next season, you'll probably hear a lot of, oh, if they drafted Steph Curry instead of Johnny Flynn, when they drafted Flynn and Rubio, Rubio and Flynn, I guess, back-to-back, and Curry then fell to the Golden State Warriors back in 2009. Yes, I guess if you're like you're talking about one of the best shooter of all time, probably already one of the top, 15 players, 12 players of all time in Steph Curry, something like that, a multiple time NBA champion, league MVP, etc. We all know the accolades of Steph Curry. Yes, that's a huge what if. There's plenty of other things that we don't know, like what could have happened. Right. Would Curry have been as good in Minnesota? Would the Wolves have messed him up? Remember, he had the ankle issues early in his career. It's so hard to say. The Wolves were, at that time, of course, very dysfunctional with David Kahn running the front office, Kurt Rambis as the head coach. Those guys did not get jobs elsewhere in those same roles or anything close to it. So clearly that Wolves regime, it may not have gone super well. I mean, obviously, Ricky Rubio turned out okay, and Johnny Flynn was actually pretty good until he had the injuries. But that one's a little bit murkier in terms of the what if. Another what if that so the Bleacher Report article asked various Timberwolves fans and media, or not Timberwolves fans, NBA fans of their individual teams, media members covering individual teams, to talk about what they would choose for their what if. And Derek James, who had written for A Wolf Among Wolves and Canis Upas, no doubt many of you follow Derek on Twitter. He did a great job covering the Wolves. He brought up the Joe Smith what if. And his reasoning is basically the timing. And he cites what I just said about Curry, like who knows what would have really happened. But with Joe Smith, the team was good when they had the illegal Joe Smith contract. Remember, they signed, if you're not familiar, they signed the under the table deal, signed off on by Glenn Taylor. It was the year 2000, I believe, that basically the Wolves said, hey, we'll sign you below market value now. You'll come back in free agency. We'll pay you more in the future, but we need the cap space now to extend Kevin Garnett, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, that is illegal. And actually, the NBA currently is investigating the Sixers for doing this with James Harden. There's an ongoing investigation that perhaps Harden took less money, agreed to come back, to then know he will get more money later from Philadelphia and to help the team improve now. Wouldn't be crazy to suggest that these things perhaps happen with some frequency. They just don't actually put them in paper. The Wolves put this in paper, on paper, which was of course, other than doing it, which was wrong. They then got themselves caught because they wrote it down. Like, I don't know. Anyway, that was a huge mistake because the Wolves had ultimately four first-round picks between 2000 and 2005 that they had to forfeit. This is the sweet spot. The Wolves made the playoffs every single year from, 97 to 04. They were in the playoffs every year, and they lost in the first round every year except for 04 when they went to the conference finals. And they didn't draft well when they had the chance to draft. The second-round picks were all throwaways, essentially. Their one first-round pick they did make during that span was Indy Eby, of course, the high schooler who had a very brief and not successful NBA career. Think if the Wolves had hit on one of those guys. I mean, how many, Josh Howard comes to mind, who, of course, later briefly played for the Wolves as like a late first-round pick by a Western Conference rival, by the Dallas Mavericks around that time, who was a really good player as a late second-round pick. Late first round pick. There's how many guys that were drafted at the end of the first round? You draft five, you'd like to think you hit on one in the first round that would have been a meaningful addition to the Wolves roster with a relatively low salary, fixed cost, etc. But the Wolves instead forfeit four first round picks in the prime of Kevin Garnett's career. How are these other? I mean, look at how Golden State's done at the end of the first round, adding guys to augment what they're doing in the prime of Steph Curry's career and Klay Thompson's career. The Timberwolves are down here, the Warriors are up here when it comes to franchise success and competency over the past several decades. So I get that. But like, I don't know, you draft five times at the end of the first round, you're going to get one right. The Wolves didn't draft all that well in the first round either. Obviously, Kevin Garnett was a big hit. But then it was like Wally Szczerbiak, and that was pretty much it. The Wolves, that's another conversation, but going back through Wolves draft history, during that span under Kevin McHale, it's not like they drafted all that well either. But if, say you hit on one of those five to add somebody to Kevin Garnett, perhaps those teams end up much differently. My favorite what if is a little bit, I would say, even more depressing, and that is the Sam Cassell hip injury. Remember Sam Cassell in the conference finals, or I guess he injured his hip. I think it was game one or maybe it was the end of the Kings series, actually, in the second round of the playoffs in 04. If Steph Curry doesn't hurt his hip, I completely believe the Wolves win that series against the Lakers. And I think it's very likely they win the NBA finals. Sam Cassell was really good that year. He was an all-star. It was his only all-star appearance, I believe, in his career. But you go back and look, it holds up how good he was. All of his shooting percentages, his assist rate was like the second best in his career. All the advanced metrics agree. Sam Cassell was a legit second star that year. Well, Latrell Sprewell was more of just a complimentary player, similar to a Wally Szczerbiak. Fred Hoiberg was very good in a complimentary role. But Sam Cassell was a legit, 1B, really, on a championship caliber team. Then he hurts his hip. And doesn't, allegedly doing the celebration dance, although that has never completely been confirmed. Flip Saunders always always kind of wouldn't cop to that. But if Sabe Cassell doesn't hurt his hip, the Wolves still took the Lakers to six games. The Lakers weren't actually that good that year. They were dominated in the finals by the Pistons that year. I think the Wolves would have given the Pistons a run for their money as well. So if Sabe Cassell doesn't get hurt, I think the Wolves are NBA champions in 2004. And I know some of those guys have said that after the fact. I think it's true. At the very least, they would have beaten the Lakers and given the Pistons a run for their money in the finals. But alas, that's Timberwolves history for you. All right, that's all we have for you today here on the show. We'll be back on Wednesday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday again this week as we work through some different NBA preview, Timberwolves season preview type content. A big thank you to those of you that do make us your first listen each and every day. It's greatly appreciated. We'll keep you going here through the basketball desert that is August and early September. So again, a big thank you and a reminder, we're free and available everywhere, including YouTube and all your favorite audio platforms. You can follow on Twitter at Lockdown T-Wolves or my account, which is at BBeacon with two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. Remember, Lockdown Wolves is part of the Lockdown Podcast Network. The Lockdown Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. Reminder that you can make your second listen the Lockdown NBA show. You can get up to date on the latest news and rumors in the league in just 30 minutes every day with Lockdown NBA. Lockdown NBA, your daily NBA update in just 30 minutes. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.